WABC New York and 107.1 WLIR Hampton Bays.
It's the 77 WABC News Hour.
Talking the news with Noah Layden.
All the news you need to know with Joe Nolan, Traffic, Justin Ellick, Sports. And now,
talking the news with Noah
on 77 WABC.
Yes, that's me. 5 o'clock. Good morning. It is Thursday, April 25th. Your forecast from the Ramsey Mazda Weather Center. Sun, clouds today. High 55, tonight and overnight clear, low 41, and then Friday sunshine, high 59. If you are walking out the door with us right now, it is 41 and partly cloudy in Valley Cottage up in Rockland County, 46 and partly cloudy over in Hamilton, New Jersey, and it is 43 and broken clouds outside our Midtown windows. A whole lot more, or a whole lot to get to, I should say, as we work our way up to the 6 o'clock hour. Sid and friends in the morning was watching this morning this Hirsch Goldberg Poland tape. He is one of the Israeli American hostages being held in Gaza. Hamas grabbing him from that Nova Music Festival back on October 7th. The first sign of the 23-year-old since he was seen by friends of his arm blown off in that attack on the concert. He was then kidnapped from it, brought into Gaza. The Goldberg family, no doubt you've seen them. The mother, the father have been out there begging the Israeli government, begging the government of other nations involved in the peace process, try to get their son out. So yesterday they got this video. It is Hirsch looking kind of gaunt, if you haven't seen it, looking a lot different than he did the day of the festival when he was kidnapped. Here's a little bit of the message that he had for his family. It was in Hebrew. So I can do a little translation. He's just talking about who he is and that he is the son of Rachel Goldberg. He goes on in this video to say that he loves his family so much. He says, I know you're doing your best to get me home as soon as possible. He says, I want you to stay strong for me and not stop until we all return home in peace. Of course, we don't know how many hostages are still alive, and I think a lot of people were shocked to see that Hirsch Goldberg is still around. That's assuming this video was shot anytime recently. We haven't really heard any response from Israeli authorities about what they think about this video. John and Rachel, who've been on with Sid Rosenberg, they did respond, as they have every day. They've put out a video on every single social media platform out there talking about their son, trying to get him back home. And I imagine they were pretty excited to see that he was still alive, the first sign of him since October 7th.
Seeing a video of Hirsch today is overwhelming. We're relieved to see him alive, but we are also concerned about his health and well-being, as well as that of all of the other hostages and all of those suffering in this region.
And it was interesting to see last night as the hostage families who've been well organized since the October 7th massacre, they took to the streets outside Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's house. Not all of them, but a fair amount of them. This spontaneous protest calling on the Prime Minister to do more to bring people like Hirsch back home. Here's Hirsch's mom, who no doubt you've seen on TV a lot lately.
And Hirsch, if you can hear this, we heard your voice today for the first time in 201 days. And if you can hear us, I am telling you, we are telling you, we love you, stay strong, survive.
It has to be, of course, incredibly difficult. There's the joyous side to see that he's alive, but the difficult side to know that they have really little power to bring him back home. And that taking place as these group of anti-Israel protesters continue to gather outside on the green out inside Columbia University. It comes as school administrators extended the deadline for them to get off the green by 48 hours. That was yesterday. So I guess they're down to about a day.
I wouldn't say I'm done with it. I mean, obviously it's crazy, but I think everyone's just like doing their best to handle the situation.
Hopefully it ends soon.
It can be intimidating because of all the security around and
than normal life, it's getting difficult.
Yes, you're hearing from a lot of students on the campus who are not involved in the protest, which is most of them, of course, because it's a small group on the green, about 100 of them. And they say, yeah, you know, they're ready for these protesters to go away. They want the press to go away. They want the counter-protest to go away so they can just go back to a normal day at Columbia University.
It's gotten worse. It wasn't that bad a couple of weeks ago or last week. It just seemed like it's more people and they get more hostile.
Increased security. I think there's just a lot of anxiety in general just surrounding the situation and what's going to happen.
And it seems like the school has set up a clock in terms of the timing when they want these protesters gone, which is really ASAP. But of course, graduation's not too far away, so they want to hold the graduation on that green, and they want to make sure they can clean up the mess that's left behind these people.
I mean, we're all a little uneasy about how this is going to play out because graduation's coming and that lawn has to be cleared.
I'm just scared that more of my friends are going to get arrested. I'm a senior also, and so there's talk that they're like canceling graduation.
No sign of that, but it did get a little noisy, a little crazier. Yesterday, you had the House Speaker, Republican House Speaker Mike Johnson, was at Columbia with some of the Republican New York lawmakers yesterday.
We just can't allow this kind of hatred and anti-Semitism to flourish on our campuses, and it must be stopped in its tracks. Those who are perpetrating this violence should be arrested.
Do you have something to say to me, Sydney?
Mike Johnson on with me, 8:15.
Mike Johnson's going to be on with Sydney, Sid and Friends in the morning at 8:15 this morning, so you can hear more about what it was like for Mike Johnson on the campus. He did not get a warm response. The students, the protesters were right behind him.
And calling on President Shafiq to resign if she cannot immediately bring order to this chaos.
He was joined by Congressman Mike Lawler, of course, Long Island.
Hamas! Okay. And every single one of you students that support Hamas are an absolute abomination.
And Mike Johnson had a message to the students who feel they're being harassed.
To every Jewish student listening to us, no matter where you are around the country, you have my word. The U.S. House of Representatives will do everything in our power to ensure that you are safe.
Again, you can hear more from the House Speaker Mike Johnson, 8:15 this morning. WABC News Time 5:09. These pro-Palestinian protesters are in solidarity with the protesters on the Columbia University campus. So we're seeing these protests break out across the country here at the University of Texas at Austin yesterday. Meanwhile, police broke up a similar tent protest at the University of Southern California. Riot police coming in, taking some of those people off the campus. Yeah, it get kind of ugly. Police getting into a scuffle with some of these protesters.
You're committing assault!
Yeah. UC Berkeley students protesting the violence in Gaza, setting up a camp and vowing not to leave.
Over $2 billion of our tuition money goes to funding contracts with weapons arms manufacturers like Boeing, BlackRock, Lockheed Martin, and many more.
It is interesting to see how each school handles this. Some schools clearly have made the decision that school ends in about a week or 2 weeks for most of these colleges, and they'll wait it out because they know the students will go home. Others like USC said, no, we're not going to wait for that. They brought the police in to clear those people off the campus. And, you know, what's been interesting about this Columbia University thing is they're definitely getting a lot of outside support. We were watching on yesterday as they got this huge food delivery at this makeshift tent city. Fruits, nuts, granola bars, these overpriced sandwiches. What is that name of that restaurant? Pret a Manger? Is that how you say it? The restaurant that sells those, like, you know, sandwiches. A good place. The anti-Israel protesters were munching on these $20 jars of Good and Gather's sea salt roasted mixed nuts. They were eating granola bars, Trader Joe's peanut butter cups, croissants, muffins from Dunkin' Donuts were being delivered. And we asked, where are they coming from? And the protesters would not tell us, but clearly someone's paying to deliver this food to those protesters who are still on the Columbia campus. All right, 5:11. Let's move on to something now. Supreme Court going to hear arguments today on Donald Trump's claim that he has absolute immunity on charges of attempting to overturn the 2020 election. Former Deputy Assistant Attorney General Tom Dupree says the questioning should provide some clarity.
I think we're going to be able to read a lot of tea leaves when we hear the questions that the justices ask. And although it's always kind of hazardous trying to predict the outcome of the cases based on justices' questions and argument, I think by tomorrow morning we'll have a pretty good sense of which way the Supreme Court is leaning.
The outcome could determine whether Trump faces a federal trial this year on four felony counts brought by special counsel Jack Smith, which include conspiracy to defraud the U.S., obstruction of an official proceeding. Trump's legal team has argued the former president should have absolute immunity from criminal prosecution for any official acts taken while he was in the White House. And the president's hush money trial that resumes in Lower Manhattan this morning. And again, he's blasting the validity of that trial. He says it's being conducted at the behest of President Biden to keep Trump off the campaign trail.
You know, this is all Biden, just in case anybody has any question. And they're keeping me in a courtroom, it's freezing, by the way, in a courtroom all day long.
So we will watch. The days he's in court are Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday. And, of course, today's Thursday.
You know, this is all Biden, just in case anybody has any question. And they're keeping me in a courtroom, it's freezing, by the way, in a courtroom all day long.
Oh, I guess we played that already. But what we have been watching, and of course, this is what the campaigns are trying to figure out, is what these court cases will do to the election come November. Registered voters in a new Quinnipiac poll weighing in on this hush money trial. 46% of voters believe the former president did something illegal. 27% in this poll believe he did something unethical, but nothing illegal. And 18% surveyed say they believe he didn't do anything wrong. If Trump were to be convicted, this is in the same survey, 21% say they would be less likely to vote for him. 62% said it wouldn't make a lick of a difference. And 15% say they would be more likely to vote for him if he was convicted. And another poll, just because why not? This shows that President Biden and former President Trump are in a dead heat when it comes to November. Of course, we're still kind of early out. It is only April. The Quinnipiac survey of national voters evenly split in their choice for president in 2024, 46% for Biden, 46% for Trump. In a five-way matchup, including the independents and Green Party candidates, Biden and Trump are still tied at 37% apiece, while the independent candidate, Robert F. Kennedy, he draws 16% support. That's big. The other independent candidates, Cornel West and Green Party candidate Jill Stein, each got 3% vote. By the way, I did an awfully interesting interview, I don't mean to pat myself on the back, with Cornel West, that is up at WABCradio.com if you just want to hear what he has to say. Sort of an interesting candidate who, right now anyway, is getting 3% in this poll. All right, 5:15, let's head over to the 77 WABC Sports Desk. Happy Thursday. Good morning, Justin Ellick.
Happy Thursday. Good morning to you, Noam Layden. Well, to the baseball in the Bronx, that's where we'll start, where Aaron Judge, Anthony Rizzo, and Juan Soto all went deep en route to a 7-3 victory for the Yankees over the Oakland A's. Really a dream night for 2024 Yankees fans, seeing those three go deep in the same game. Yanks won for the fifth time in seven games and improved to 10-1 in their last 11 in the Bronx against Oakland. It was the first time Judge, Rizzo, and Soto homered in the same game this season, hopefully not the last. Alex Verdugo added a sacrifice fly as the Yanks totaled 11 hits. Clark Schmidt now 2-0 on the year, allowed 3 runs and 4 hits in 5 1/3 innings. The right-hander struck out 6 and walked 2. From the trainer's room, DJ LeMahieu underwent an MRI and CT scan that showed continued swelling in his right foot. He'll be shut down for at least another week, so that's a setback. LeMahieu was removed in the second inning of his first rehab game Tuesday for Double-A Somerset due to soreness in his right foot. New York will go for the series win in tonight's finale against Oakland, set for a 7:05 p.m. first pitch. Nestor Cortez is scheduled to get the start in Pinstripes. Out west, Francisco Lindor hit a pair of two-run homers, and the Mets have ordered a three-game series sweep with an 8-2 win over the San Francisco Giants. Lindor went 4-for-5 with 4 RBI and recorded the 16th multi-homer game of his career. Tyrone Taylor homered and added a 2-run double, and Jeff McNeil had an RBI single as New York snapped a 3-game skid. Mets starter Sean Manaea struggled with his command but battled through 4 2/3 scoreless innings with 6 strikeouts and 4 walks. The 32-year-old left-hander allowed 4 hits, all singles. Manaea, who pitched for the Giants last year, threw 101 pitches and was lifted with 2 outs in the 5th inning, 1 out shy of qualifying for the win. The Mets improved to 13-6 in their last 19 contests. From their trainer's room, veteran slugger J.D. Martinez, with his lower back tightness, played in his second game at AAA Syracuse. He's expected to make his Mets debut Friday at home against, or tomorrow, I guess you could say, at home against St. Louis when the Mets open up a weekend set against the Cardinals. On the hardwood, we've got Game 3 between the Knicks and the Sixers to look forward to tonight, with the series traveling to Philadelphia now for the next 2 contests. Tip-off is scheduled for 7:30 p.m. with New York in command and a 2-0 series lead. On the ice in the NHL, the Islanders return home in a 2-games-to-none hole against their first-round playoff opponent in the Carolina Hurricanes. Puck drop for Game 3 in Elmont, scheduled for 7:30 p.m. The Islanders trying to spring to life a bit on home ice there. Last but not least, the 2024 NFL Draft is set to open tonight in Nome in Detroit at 8 p.m. As it stands right now, the Giants will pick at 6th overall and the Jets 10th. The Chicago Bears have this year's first overall pick. That's your Sports Dome. I'm Justin Ellick on 77 WABC.
WABC News Time 519. Arizona's House of Representatives voted to repeal that Civil War era abortion law.
32 ayes, 28 noes. We passed House Bill 2677, signed in open session. Clerks instructed to record the action. The House conveyed the bill to the Senate.
State Democrats successfully pushing through a bill that repeals the 1864 one that bans nearly all abortion. The bill now heads to the state Senate, where it's expected to be passed, but not until next month. The Arizona Supreme Court revived this law earlier this month, with it set to go into effect as early as June. The vote to repeal the law came after 2 other attempts had failed to bring that bill to the House floor. That's taking place is, by the way, California, of course, next door, was offering anybody who needed an abortion in Arizona to come there, and that the governor, Gavin Newsom, would protect them.
Those health care providers in good standing in Arizona to be able to provide that basic care to patients fleeing the state of Arizona into the state of California and support that access here.
521, the Oklahoma State Senate passing a bill that bans schools from using corporal punishment on disabled students. State Senator Dave Rader says his bill defines certain disabilities.
A disability includes autism, deaf blindness, emotional disturbance, hearing impairment, intellectual disability, other health impairment.
Sort of hard to imagine an evil that people would be using corporal punishment on disabled students, and that there even needs to be a bill to ban it.
If children are capable of misbehaving and capable of functioning in the classroom, and suddenly we put this wall, this protection around them so that equal discipline is not uniformly presented in compliance with parents, how do we rectify that?
Yeah, well, so here's the problem, I guess. They have to decide what is a disability and what is not a disability, but you could just get rid of corporal punishment altogether and then it wouldn't be an issue.
A lot of people in Oklahoma do believe that corporal punishment can be helpful, but we also know that corporal punishment can be misused, overused, and can be a shortcut to really developing the moral agency of our kids for their life.
Yeah. All right. 522, Maryland Attorney General Anthony Brown vowing to hold all responsible parties accountable for the Francis Scott Key Bridge collapse. Brown toured the wreckage of the collapse site yesterday, saying his office is going to hold those responsible for the disaster accountable.
This is all part of the state, the Office of the Attorney General, doing our part, which is going to be to protect the interests of the state of Maryland, and which will involve legal actions, claims made against a number of parties.
6 construction workers died more than 4 weeks ago when the container ship Dolly struck the bridge, causing it to collapse into the river below. President Biden praising the passage of that sweeping foreign aid package yesterday, includes aid for Ukraine, Israel, and the Indo-Pacific. He put a signature on it yesterday morning. Ukrainian President Zelensky thanking the U.S. for passing the aid package.
I hope that you and the Americans will feel the result of their help, a result to save Ukraine and Ukrainians.
Shipments of military aid already flowing to Ukraine just hours after the bill passed, as Kyiv is running low on munitions in its fight against Russia. Part of that bill, by the way, was foreign aid. And the other part was this potential ban on TikTok, which, as you might guess, among the younger crowd, and some people in the older crowd are like myself, getting a lot of attention, that if TikTok doesn't sell off itself to an American entity in the next couple months, the lawmakers will ban it. You'll no longer be able to watch TikTok. So the Chinese parent company who owns it now says they don't have any plan to sell it.
Rest assured, we aren't going anywhere. We are confident, and we will keep fighting for your rights in the courts. The facts and the Constitution are on our side, and we expect to prevail again.
Yeah, so they are lobbying lawmakers big time to try to keep TikTok in Chinese ownership. The lawmakers in Washington argue that the Chinese government is using TikTok to steal information from us, to influence us when it comes to the elections. But the argument from the kids, and I've heard this, and it's a legitimate argument, is doesn't Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat, we can go on and on, Twitter do the same thing? Don't they take our information, use it, sell it to others, send it back to us, try to influence us, much like TikTok does?
It's actually ironic because the freedom of expression on TikTok reflects the same American values that make the United States a beacon of freedom.
It is interesting, though. People on both sides of the aisle, it's rare they agree. Republicans, Democrats seem to be in unison on this one. They want TikTok gone.
We have invested billions of dollars to secure your data and keep our platform free from outside manipulation.
Yeah, so I don't know if I buy that either. That's the CEO of TikTok. But, you know, one side's doing it, the other side's doing it. Why are we, you know, going after the Chinese? I guess the other ones are American entities, and maybe they feel like they can be trusted more. Airlines will soon have to give refunds for canceled and excessively delayed flights. Secretary of Transportation Pete Buttigieg says in addition to that, there will now be strict rules on how airlines give passengers that refund.
We're also saying they've got to offer cash, not miles, not vouchers. If you, the passenger, ask for that, fine, but the default, the automatic default, if the passenger does nothing else, has to be cash.
Department of Transportation announcing the rollout of these new rules that call for automatic cash refunds if a flight is canceled or delayed for more than 3 hours or 6 hours for international flights. Refunds of checked bag fees will also be required if a passenger's luggage is lost and not returned within 12 hours.
When the bag gets there hours and hours and hours after you do, at a certain point, that becomes really an unfair practice if the airline still took your money for checking it in the first place. In the past, passengers have really had to fight just to get the money that is technically already owed to them.
DOT giving the airline 6 months to comply with the new rules. Have you noticed that self-checkout lanes are in some stores going away? Big name retailers starting to close them in some places because it's all about stopping shoplifters who are just about everywhere now.
They're doing it in stores where they feel that they had higher shrink. So they're trying to see if it helps.
Professor Thomas McMillan, he heads the Center for Retailing Studies at Texas A&M. He says that younger shoppers like the self-checkout, so removing them, of course, a delicate balance. But Walmart announcing this month that they're phasing out the self-checkouts at stores in St. Louis, other stores as well. This comes as a decision by Dollar General, which they're returning to regular checkouts, no more self-checkout. And Target has begun limiting how many items can be brought to self-checkout lanes.
They're doing it in stores where they feel that they had higher shrink. So they're trying to see if it helps.
Yeah, so not clear if it will, but it's interesting that they are moving away because just too much stuff is apparently being ripped off at those self-checkout lanes. The opening bell, it rings this morning after stocks ended Wednesday in mixed territory. At the closing bell, the Dow fell 42 points. S&P 500 gained 1. NASDAQ rose 16 points. Yesterday's finish came ahead of today's release of the gross domestic product report. Most analysts with their eyes on the GDP are expecting to see economic growth cooled in the first quarter.
Radio 77, WABC. It's the 77 WABC News Hour.
Talking the news with Noam Layden.
All the news you need to know with Joe Nolan, Traffic, Justin Ellick, Sports. And now,
Talking the News with Noam
on 77 WABC.
Yes, that's me, 533. Good morning. It is Thursday, April 25th. Your forecast from the Ramsey Mazda Weather Center. A mix of sun and clouds today, high 55. Tonight and overnight, clear, low 41. And then Friday, sunshine, high 59. If you're walking out the door with us right now, so happy you are, 42 and partly cloudy in Valley Cottage up in Rockland County, 47 and partly cloudy over in Hamilton, New Jersey, and it is 43 and partly cloudy outside our Midtown studios right now. Let's start this half hour out on Long Island, where investigators yesterday searching this wooded area in Manorville as part of the Gilgo Beach investigation. Search began Tuesday, continued all day Wednesday. Two NYPD canines helping assist Suffolk County Police as they comb through this large wooded area. This is right off the LIE near Exit 70. I know this exit because then you head up and there's the beaches and the Hamptons. And that wooded area in Manorville is very desolate. There's not a whole lot there. And a lot of bodies, or a fair amount of them anyway, have been dropped off over there in the years. You had a lot of people watching this search from afar. Former FBI guys, retired cops, all weighing in on what they thought might be happening there.
I heard that they've been there for like 3 days. Thus, now they have a wider search using cadaver dogs.
They're going to look at the method and the way that these women were murdered and try to attach it to him to see if it fits. It's a puzzle.
Yeah, so there were two female bodies found in Manorville, and they haven't been able to figure out who killed them. The Suffolk District Attorney's Office, they declined to comment on the specific nature of the search. They issued this statement that said, we don't comment on investigative steps while they're underway, and that basically they weren't going to give us a whole lot of information on it. Rex Uhrman, charged in connection with the deaths of four women whose bodies were found near Gilgo Beach, but it seems clear they think they can tie him to other deaths as well. He's pled not guilty, by the way, to all of those. Authorities have said their investigation continues to see if they can link Uhrman to maybe six other victims. Now, not clear if that's what the search was all about. Yesterday, more retired FBI and NYPD cops weighing in.
Now, Manorville, where they're searching, is notorious for people dumping bodies in there. So I wouldn't be surprised if they recover other bodies that might not necessarily be related to Gilgo.
Yeah, so this is, again, a pretty desolate stretch of highway that takes you towards the Hamptons, this Manorville exit on the LIE exit 70. While we're out on Long Island, the Islip School District on alert following a threat to the school. The superintendent sending an email out to parents and students yesterday. The threat against the school district was from a man who they've been able to identify. We've seen a lot of these threats lately. A lot of them have come from overseas. And of course, they have to go in and make sure that there's nothing going on inside the school. We don't know the nature of the threat from this person, but they say they know who it is, which suggests it's somebody local. In fact, they even have a picture of this guy. Of course, as you might guess, parents a little concerned that school stayed open.
I want to keep my baby home. You know, she's 13. She's in the middle school. But, you know, that's not the answer. We still need to take it serious, and I'm glad that they're taking it serious.
Suffolk County Police say the threat was made during a social media exchange between two former high school associates.
We trust the school district. We trust our police officers. So, you know, we're going to let them do their job.
Yeah, so police beefing up, of course, patrols out the school. They checked the inside of the school, found nothing. But, of course, now they're going to try to track down this person who made that threat. WABC News Time 539. Let's go out to Long Island, or rather, I'm sorry, Coney Island. Divers from the NYPD, the FDNY, will be back out in the water again this morning after someone jumped off a pier near the steeplechase. This was about 3 o'clock yesterday. The person spotted in the water. The NYPD, the FDNY, racing to the water. They could not find anybody. In fact, six divers could be seen at the scene searching for the person in the ocean. Nothing. This fisherman watched it all.
Yeah, I'm out here fishing.
I can't believe somebody just came and jumped off. That's crazy. Like, come on, man.
It is a little crazy. They say the search efforts will continue this morning at 9 o'clock because they do believe the eyewitness accounts that somebody was struggling in the water. A school crossing guard here in the city allegedly tried to lure an undercover cop he believed was a 14-year-old girl to have sex with him. 24-year-old Jared Gerardori charged yesterday with attempted use of a child in a sexual performance, attempted rape, following this undercover police investigation, according to the Queens District Attorney's Office.
You have to treat them as your own because every...
Oh, so here is a crossing guard who's retired now, who's shocked to hear that somebody would do something like this.
You have to treat them as your own because every day you saw the same kids. Every day you saw the same kids.
The undercover investigation began after police received complaints from underage people about Gerardori, who worked as a school crossing guard in Jamaica. So they put out this officer who posed as a 14-year-old girl. He met Gerardori at this intersection in Jamaica back on March 28th. The undercover officer connected with the crossing guard on Instagram, and eventually he allegedly tried to meet her at a hotel for sex. Police were waiting for the crossing guard at the hotel and arrested Gerardori on Tuesday. Parents whose kids had been crossed at this intersection by Gerardori were a little freaked out to hear about what had taken place.
I feel shocked. I feel like, like my kid.
There's a lot of bad people in the world, but it just like makes me want to protect my kids even more.
Queens District Attorney Melinda Katz releasing a statement last night saying Gerardori faces up to 7 years in prison if he's convicted. There is a growing concern about a shocking investigation from the Manhattan DA's office that revealed YouTube's algorithm is pushing ghost gun content to those most at risk of making the weapons, including children playing video games at home. The Manhattan DA, Alvin Bragg, revealing the details of this investigation, and he said the videos in question are showing viewers how to make the untraceable ghost guns. So what he's saying, and make it a little more clear, is kids will tune in to watch how certain games are played. They watch, this is a big thing if you don't have kids, young kids. They will go on the places like YouTube to watch other people play video games. And when those videos end, other videos are suggested for them to watch. And in YouTube's algorithm, they're saying, the videos that then are suggested to watch afterwards are ones on how to make ghost guns. Here's the DA, Alvin Bragg.
All you need is a computer and a mouse and an interest in gaming, and you can go from games to guns in 15 minutes. This is an algorithm that is driving people, in particular our youth, with a few clicks from watching a video game to being able to build guns, to then, in turn, walking around with ghost guns on our street and then in our office because we've charged them with a crime.
The DA now has sent a letter to YouTube asking the streaming giant to figure out what's up with that algorithm that is sending these ghost guns, mostly, it seems like, to kids. Other people in the DA's office working on this investigation.
About 4 minutes into searching, after we started from Call of Duty, we see this video on how an AK-47 works. Then we see more videos being suggested just 4 minutes after searching Call of Duty videos.
In fact, a 17-year-old they brought in, the suggestion is that he may have learned about ghost guns because they were suggested to him in YouTube videos.
When we are debriefing or interviewing these perpetrators that are arrested, the younger kids are saying, we want to make these because they look so cool, and you could make them look so cool.
5:43, let's go out to New Jersey. New Jersey's first major wildfire of the year breaking out yesterday. Wharton State Forest. Firefighters racing to the scene to stop it from spreading further. Even though it's been kind of wet, they say the forest is still pretty dry. They've been able to essentially contain this thing. Here are some firefighters at the scene.
Soil drains very quickly, and therefore the fuel moisture drops very quickly. The water dissipates. The sun is still hitting the foliage on the ground because there's no leaf out yet. So the fuels dry very quickly this time of year.
I think he's trying to explain how it all started. The fire stayed away from homes and buildings, but crews closed a state-run campground, some local roads. This year's fire season getting off to a slow start, but the New Jersey State Fire Warden cautioning against getting lured into complacency with many months still left to go. And in a moment, we'll talk about how preparations are underway in one small Westchester town where they're all excited about the president's visit coming later today. We'll get into that in a moment. Verse 545, let's head over to the 77 WABC Sports Desk where we find Justin Ellick.
Well, thank you, Noam Layden. Start with baseball in the Bronx last night. Aaron Judge, Anthony Rizzo, and Juan Soto all went deep and are out to a 7-3 victory for the Yankees over the Oakland A's. Yanks won for the fifth time in seven games and improved to 10-1 in their last 11 in the Bronx against Oakland. It was the first time Judge, Rizzo, and Soto homered in the same game this season. Alex Verdugo added a sack fly as the Yanks totaled 11 hits. Clark Schmidt, now 2-0 on the year, allowed three runs and four hits in five and a third innings. The right-hander struck out six and walked two. From the trainer's room, DJ LeMay, who underwent an MRI and CT scan that showed continued swelling in his right foot, so he'll be shut down for at least another week. LeMay, who was removed in the second inning of his first rehab game Tuesday for AA Somerset due to soreness in his right foot. New York will go for the series win in tonight's finale against Oakland, set for 7:05 p.m. first pitch. Nestor Cortez is scheduled to get the start in pinstripes. Out west, Francisco Lindor had a pair of two-run homers, and the Mets have ordered a three-game sweep with an 8-2 win over the San Francisco Giants. Lindor went 4-for-5 with four RBI and recorded the 16th multi-homer game of his career. Tyrone Taylor homered and added a two-run double, and Jeff McNeil had an RBI single as New York snapped a three-game skid. Mets starter Sean Manaea struggled with his command, but battled through 4 2/3 scoreless innings with six strikeouts and four walks. The 32-year-old left-hander allowed four hits, all singles. Manaea, who pitched for the Giants the last season, threw 101 pitches, was lifted with two outs in the fifth inning. One-out shot, qualifying for a win. The Mets improved to 13-6 in their last 19 games. From their trainer's room, veteran slugger J.D. Martinez, with that lower back tightness, he played in his second game at AAA Syracuse and is expected to make his Mets debut Friday, tomorrow, against St. Louis when the Mets open up a weekend set against the Cardinals. On the hardwood, we've got Game 3 between the Knicks and Sixers to look forward to tonight, with the series traveling to Philadelphia now for the next two contests. Tip-off is scheduled for 7:30 p.m., and New York is in command, 2-0 series lead. On the ice in the NHL, the Islanders return home in a two-games-to-none hole against their first-round playoff opponent, the Carolina Hurricanes. Puck drop for Game 3 in Elmont, scheduled for 7:30, with the Islanders trying to spring to life a bit here on home ice. And last but not least, the 2024 NFL Draft is set to open tonight in Detroit at 8 p.m. As it stands right now, the Giants will pick at 6th overall and the Jets 10th. The Chicago Bears have this year's first overall pick. That's your Sports Gnome. I'm Justin Ellick on 77 WABC.
Let's catch you up on some of the big stories of the morning. One of them yesterday, 23-year-old Hirsch Goldberg Poland. He is one of the hostages that was taken by Hamas when they, during that massacre on October 7th, taken back into Gaza. We have not heard or seen anything from him until yesterday when Hamas released a hostage video. Here's what he had to say. It was in Hebrew. So he's essentially introducing who he is, and he says he's the son of Rachel Goldberg, John Goldberg. Of course, no doubt you've seen them as they've been out almost every single day on every social media platform reminding the world that their son is still being held hostage. They were excited to see that he was still alive after 201 days. Of course, they were wondering what may have happened to him. He looks gaunt, much skinnier than he did when he was at that Nova Music Festival where he was kidnapped from back on October 7th. His arm was blown off. We knew that already from witnesses who saw that take place. You could see in the video that his arm was missing. Hours after that video was released, John and Rachel, his parents, released their own video.
Seeing a video of Hirsch today is overwhelming. We're relieved to see him alive, but we are also concerned about his health and well-being, as well as that of all of the other hostages and all of those suffering in this region.
And the release of that hostage video spurned some protests outside Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's home in Jerusalem yesterday. The hostage family saying he's not doing enough to bring their loved ones home. And Rachel, who's been on with Sid Rosenberg on Sid and Friends in the Morning, had a message for her son just on the off chance that he might see it.
And Hirsch, if you can hear this, We heard your voice today for the first time in 201 days. And if you can hear us, I am telling you, we are telling you, we love you. Stay strong. Survive.
Now, we don't know where he is. The Israeli authorities have not said anything about the video at all. Meanwhile, a group of anti-Israel protesters gathering outside and inside the Columbia campus still. Those tents remain on campus. The school's president had told those protesters yesterday they had 48 hours to get off the campus screen. They're still there today. And it's interesting to see other students on campus, the ones who are not involved in the protest, which of course is 99% of the population at Columbia, who say they're kind of sick and tired of these protests now.
I wouldn't say I'm done with it. I mean, obviously it's crazy, but I think everyone's just like doing their best to handle the situation.
Hopefully it ends soon.
It can be intimidating because of all the security around and the normal life, it's getting difficult.
Yeah, there's just, you know, protests and there's the counter protests and there's the press, the cameras.
It's gotten worse. It wasn't that bad a couple of weeks ago or last week. It just seemed like it's more people and they get more hostile.
Increased security. I think there's just a lot of anxiety in general just surrounding the situation and what's going to happen.
School seems to be up against the clock. They want that green cleared because that's where they do graduation.
I mean, we're all a little uneasy about how this is going to play out because graduation's coming and that lawn has to be cleared.
I'm just scared that more of my friends are going to get arrested. I'm a senior also, and so there's talk that they're like canceling graduation.
Lawmakers continued to visit the university yesterday. It was House Speaker Mike Johnson at Columbia demanding the president resign unless she reins in anti-Semitic protests. He met with the president for a short time yesterday.
We just can't allow this kind of hatred and anti-Semitism to flourish on our campuses, and it must be stopped in its tracks. Those who are perpetrating this violence should be arrested.
He talked about the possibility of calling in the National Guard.
And calling on President Shafiq to resign if she cannot immediately bring order to this chaos.
He was jeered by students on campus because his speech was taking place next to the counter-protesters. It's just kind of a mess on the campus no matter where you go.
To every Jewish student listening to us, no matter where you are around the country, you have my word. The U.S. House of Representatives will do everything in our power to ensure that you are safe.
You can hear more about Mike Johnson's visit to Columbia University. He'll be on 8:15 with my good friend Sid Rosenberg on Sid and Friends in the Morning. Meanwhile, Palestinian protests breaking out now on campuses across the country here, University of Texas at Austin. Dozens of pro-Palestinian protesters escorted off the campus of the University of Southern California yesterday as they tried to start a tent city.
You're committing assault! This is illegal! You're committing assault!
It's interesting to see what these campuses are doing. Some of them taking a wait-and-see attitude towards these protests because school ends for most of these students in just a week or two. Other schools like University of Southern California not waiting, bringing in the riot police to take those protesters out yesterday. Downtown, the president will be back. Former President Donald Trump will be back in a courtroom for his hush money trial that resumes in Lower Manhattan again today, blasting he is the validity of his trial here in New York.
You know, this is all Biden, just in case anybody has any question. And they're keeping me in a courtroom, it's freezing, by the way, in a courtroom all day long.
And the Supreme Court going to hear arguments this morning on Donald Trump's claim that he has absolute immunity on charges of attempting to overturn the 2020 election. Former Deputy Assistant Attorney General Tom Dupree says that Thursday's questioning should provide some clarity from the court.
I think we're going to be able to read a lot of tea leaves when we hear the questions that the justices ask. And although it's always kind of hazardous trying to predict the outcome of the cases based on justices' questions and argument, I think by tomorrow morning we'll have a pretty good sense of which way the Supreme Court is leaning.
The outcome could determine whether Trump faces a federal trial this year on four felony counts brought by special counsel Jack Smith, which include conspiracy to defraud the U.S. and obstruction of an official proceeding. And of course, everybody trying to figure out what this does in terms of the vote come November. A Quinnipiac survey, of course, it's only April, but it's weighing in on former President Trump's current trial in Lower Manhattan. 46% of the people polled in the survey say the former president did something something illegal. 27% believe he did something unethical. 18% say they don't think he did anything wrong. And if he is convicted, 62% say it would not make a lick of a difference. 21% say they'd be less likely to vote for him. And the latest poll on the election itself, also from Quinnipiac, shows the race in a dead heat, as it has been for the last month or so. The president, 46%, former President Trump at 46%. When you throw in all those independent and third party candidates, what's awfully interesting is they're still tied at 37% each, though Robert F. Kennedy draws some 16%.